a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos and Ton Nebetis taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. So, Ton, it's been pretty warm, and I'm assuming that the watering schedule is going to change big time now that the temperatures are going to be cooling off. So what should we be doing for our lawns? What is the best watering schedule?
Well, the lawns in general don't really need to be watered right now. And especially if they're established and over a year old, those roots are usually deep enough. And even if you're top of the lawn, the blades start to brown out, the roots are fine and they will be fine. The lawn will be fine on just regular snow and rain through the winter and will come out in the spring just fine. Now, if your lawn is brand new and the roots are not that deep, let's say you planted it in August, you're going to need to keep the soil moist until we start getting rain and snow and the ground stays wet.
Okay, so if people are still doing some watering, should they taper it off or do they just cut the lawn off?
You know, there's a lot of concern right now for, like, Central Utah Water Conservancy District, Jordan Water, Weber Basin, about a drought. And I've been seeing not really huge blatant statements, but we're being encouraged to save water because we don't know what this winter looks like. You know, we're still, I mean, when's the last time we've been October 10th and 83 degrees or 85 degrees, you know, it's just unseasonably warm and we need to do what we can to save that water. And so I would encourage people to back off, you know, get your sprinklers cleaned out and start shutting things down because we will get cold. And oftentimes what happens when we get these unseasonably warm falls is that the temperature just drops like a rock all of a sudden, whether it's in, you know, late October or November. And so I would really recommend getting things shut down. Now, if you really want to, you know, give your lawn a final watering and water it deeply, you know, so it will hold. And if you'll do that, especially with the cooler temperatures, you shouldn't need to water the rest of the year. Now, one thing we should bring up, Maria, is that if you have pines and spruce or other conifers, like fir trees in your yard, those will need to be watered to keep soil moist around them until we get rain and snow. They cannot tolerate dry soil in the fall. And what will happen is that the drought stress makes them really susceptible to engraver beetles. And so if you've been into the Uintas and our mountains and seen just entire slopes filled with dead, you know, it's mostly subalpine fir, the drought stress and engraver beetles have caused that with some other diseases in a lot of situations. And so my advice on the conifers is absolutely water them to a foot to 18 inches deep. And if we don't get rain for another month or two, you may need to do this again using hose water in, you know, mid-November on a warmer day.
All right. Next texter says Springville City has free mulch that is simply chopped yard waste. They want to know if they till this into their garden, are they in essence planting someone else's weed seed?
Not generally. I've seen the Springville City operation, and it's a pretty clean operation. But it's just more that it is just not composted. And if you're trying to use it to improve the soil, because it's coarse and it's, you know, chunky, in essence, it will take a while to break down. And if you did more than just maybe like a half of an inch to an inch and work that in a foot deep, you could actually rob your soil of so much nitrogen because the microorganisms are trying to break it down that it will stunt your garden.
What are some smaller trees, 20 to 30 feet tall, that will do well at a property on the lake shore at Bear Lake?
Oh, we're talking cold then, almost the North Pole. No, I'm not really that cold, but well, only place I've ever been in the middle of late July and August that I've had to wear a jacket during the day.
It's true.
So it's not usually like that. A spring snow crabapple would be one that would be great that I've seen in the Bear Lake area in Garden City that does well. There are some hawthorns that would do well that are perfectly cold hardy. Canada Red Chokecherry is another one. You know, I would stay away from the flowering plums because they are not that hardy. Those even take damage in Logan. So crab apples in general, you need to look at the tag and make sure it's at least a zone 4. Hawthorns and Canada Red Cherry would all be great options.
Okay. Next person is going to be laying sod in the spring, and they want to know when is the best time to do that, and do you have a recommendation of where they could go get it? I guess it depends on the area, though, too.
It depends. You know, there's a lot of sod farms, and what I'd recommend doing, because the construction and industry has been so hot over the last few years that you oftentimes need to get your order in weeks in advance to actually get sod. You know, I've talked to so many people that said, I've called everyone and they just laugh at me, or they tell me it's going to be 6 weeks or it's going to be 2 months. And so, you know, the sod growers I have seen locally, all of them do a, you know, pretty good job. And so what I would look at is maybe price and the area you live in. And if you plan to have it delivered, you need to get it booked now.
And again, the best time for them to lay that sod?
Sometime mid-April usually was when it's warm enough that you can work the soil and have it leveled. If you lay it earlier, a lot of times the soil is too wet and it just makes a mucky mess. A lot of times, because the sod is cut using fairly heavy machinery, the sod companies can't actually get out. So usually, you know, any time from late March to mid-April, just depending on the weather.
The next texter has been cleaning their chicken coop into a compost pile all year. They want to know if they can safely till this compost into their vegetable garden for fall, even though some matter hasn't completely composted. There you go.
Probably. It's just one of those things that there's too many unknowns for me to say, oh, yeah, go ahead and do
it. I don't like the word probably.
You know, I think that the key here would be to put maybe an inch or so down and work it in. If it's not completely decomposed, there's a chance that it's quite salty. And so I would just maybe do an inch, work it in for now. In early spring, as soon as you can work the soil, do another half of an inch to an inch and rake it in then. It decomposes fairly quickly. And what they could do is give it another couple of months and sometime into June, you know, work it in even around, you know, to the sides of the plants just really lightly. But they would be better off doing 2 or 3 light applications than 1 heavy one.
The next person wants to know whether they can keep their Blue Point junipers from getting any taller. They want to know how to do that and when would be the best time to try to prune them.
Well, it depends on how tall those get. The Blue Points want to get 20 or 25 feet tall. And if they start trimming on them for a few years, yes. But if you keep just giving them a haircut and keeping them at that same absolute height, eventually they cut so much growth off that they get really leggy and thin and they'll eventually die. And so short term, yes. Longer term, they may need to consider taking them out in favor of something that won't get too big.
That's not very satisfying. Lois in Centerville wants to know, are there any ferns that can tolerate partial sun?
East exposure maybe, but not like a south or west. So most of the ferns would do an east exposure, especially if it's more, not southeast, but, you know, just solid east or northeast would be better. But beyond that, I'm not really comfortable saying any of them would.
So you're not going to say there's a particular variety that would do better than another one?
No, no.
Okay. When is the best time to transplant a mature incredible hydrangea?
Boy, I wish I knew what mature meant. Yeah, I'm assuming this thing's 6 or 8 feet high and wide. and it may be too big to manage the transplanting. And if they hired a company to come in and do it for them with a tree spade, mm-hmm. they could buy a whole yard of incredible hydrangeas.
Right. So what if it's not that large?
Well, if it's younger, you know, say 2 or 3 or 4 years old, what they would do is, if it's not an emergency, go in near the base of the shrub with a really sharp shovel and go around about a third of it and sever the roots right next to the base and leave the other 2/3 of the roots intact. Leave it. Then you'd go in the next fall after the leaves drop and go about 6 inches out from where you severed. And then you would dig a circle around, trenching to probably 1 foot to maybe 18 inches deep. And you need that trench wide enough that you can get the shovel underneath to sever the roots of the shrub. You're probably going to need 2 or 3 people, but then you're going to get an inexpensive tarp and gently slide it under your root ball and wrap it up, lift it out, and then move it to its new home.
Can they do that now?
The reason I'm having them sever the roots in the spring is because where those roots are severed, a lot of really, you know, brand new roots are formed right near the base of the shrub. And that will help it survive, you know, ongoing, because you cut the other 2/3 off. And so it would probably survive, but it really, just digging it up and moving it will greatly reduce those chances.
It's a tough one.
It is.
All right. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us on the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Tana with you. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Our next listener is asking if it's too late to successfully plant sod in Park City. They say that the sod farms are telling them that now is still a good time to plant.
They can, and it'll most likely survive. I think the better question is it ideal? And so I've seen sod survive some pretty amazing things, and it's been fine. I've seen it laid where it was frozen sheets before. And so, you know, my recommendation would be, if you have to, get it done, especially with the warmer weather. But if you can wait, I would do that.
All right. Let's take a call from Frank in West Jordan. Good morning, Frank. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning. Hey, thanks for taking the call. Hey, we planted a tricolor beech in May, and it's doing great. It was pretty tall when we got it. It was about 12 feet high. But it's got some like blisters and that are dark
discolored.
On the leaves or the branches?
On the body of it, the bark.
Okay. Now, when you say blisters, are you seeing like white fuzzy stuff, or?
Well, the white fuzzy stuff's on the body also, but these are in addition. Okay. My wife says there's no white fuzzy stuff, so I guess there isn't. But we're trying to text you a picture of it, and we're not having much luck.
We can't take pictures over the text line, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it won't allow
okay,
you to do that. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine. But anyway, it's my best description would be it's kind of a coffee colored, and it's I say it looks like a sore on your arm or something. On that's not very maybe a good analogy, but we're concerned about we're trying to figure out what to do on this, and so here we are.
Well, I can't really do much for you, and maybe you could send some pictures over to our Facebook page, and if you wanted to upload them on our Facebook page, you can send us pictures through the messaging app.
We're novices at this cell phone.
Or if you could get someone to do it for you, we could sure look at them and see if we can find anything. But one thing I'd recommend is maybe get a sharp knife or a razor blade and just gently cut under where you're seeing these spots. And if it's green underneath, I wouldn't worry about it. But if it's brown or something, then we may need to take some further steps.
Oh, okay. So just cut a little bit out of the bark?
On a very shallow angle, so that you're just kind of peeling it away, almost like you're peeling a potato. You're just going to cut into that bark and see if it's brown or black underneath or green. If it's green, don't do anything because it's probably fine.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, they told us when we planted it that they wanted us to water it about 15 minutes a day for the rest of the year.
You know, that's fine for short term, and longer term, though, as those roots get established, you know, is it in the lawn, or do you have to supplement water it?
Well, we'll have drippers on it eventually, but for right now, we just use a hose, and we just barely let a trickle run on it. We've got a little reservoir built up around it, and we've kept the root base that they planted it. And so we have mulch in that back there, but we've kept that off of that part of the tree, you know.
Okay. What I recommend doing is backing off on that. And when you soak it in really well, especially this time of year, once a week is probably going to be sufficient.
Okay.
And then next year, I would continue to do that, but don't just put drip on it because those roots grow way beyond the root ball. And pouring, you know, a few gallons of water around the trunk doesn't do that tree any good. And so what I would recommend doing if you're supplement irrigating is you have to use a kind of drip called grid irrigation, or better yet, just put a hose in sprinkler under it.
All right. Good luck, Frank. We need to take a break for the top of the hour news. The number to call when we come back, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.